On today's episode, we're going to explore two words, grief and mourning, how they're similar, how they're different, and what they actually mean.
Yeah, and why people misuse them. So let's talk about it.
Let's talk about death, baby. Let's talk about grief and mourning. Is it argumental or existential? What's it mean to me? Let's talk about death.
Nicholas Cabal, psychologist.
Hey, Nick, let's talk about death.
Let's do it.
So, Benny, let's do a little definition dive. How about that?
That sounds wonderful. What are we going to define today?
Well, I think there's a lot of terms used in our profession that maybe we need to educate a little bit better.
Let's do it. Are these some big boys?
No. This is normal termage, verbiage.
Okay. All right.
But I think it's important to decipher between the two. So we're going to talk primarily on this episode about the difference between grief and mourning. So there is a difference.
Okay. But before we get to that, Doc, I want to give you a tip of the fedora. Because as of, I'm looking at a certification of a certified grief-informed professional, Dr. Nicholas Cabal. Way to go.
That I am. I am informed.
You are informed.
I am informed.
Dude, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. Just another cert.
It's important, though. It's important to our listeners, and it's important to me. So
I keep up.
So what terms, we're going to talk about grief and mourning.
So grief is the internal, whereas mourning is the external. Meaning, grief is more of what we feel inside, where mourning is the external things that we do outside. So, example, feeling angry would be part of grief, right? Where mourning would be going to a funeral or spreading mom's ashes. That would be mourning.
Okay. Sounds good. Can those two get cloudy? Is there a time in your clinical talk
Let me ask you this. Does your internal ever bleed into your external?
Well,
and does your external ever bleed into your
Isn't that what Nirvana is?
Well, it's an interesting topic you bring up, Ben. But no, it's just something
I think it brings up because I think people just say grief. They don't really go into the difference of what it actually means. And that makes a lot of sense, Doc, because the grief is what we feel, the emotions, the depression, the anxiety, the anger, all the 5, 7, 9 stages, whatever people want to talk about. But that's interesting because even 5 years ago, Doc, I wouldn't have known the difference, right? I just assume I'm grieving or I'm mourning. It's the same thing. But it makes sense because if you look at, especially when you go to other traditions, right? So you brought it up, like going to a funeral, a visitation, you're mourning. You're mourning the loved one or you're mourning the neighbor or mourning the blah, blah. But when you're at home and you're in your own thoughts or you're grieving.
Well, it's just interesting because if you were to sit with an English major, right, and you a lot of people will use affect and effect interchangeably, but there is actually a right and wrong way to use
who and whom, right?
Whom's a tough one. Whom is a very tough word to use.
I want to give a shout out to our older brother, David, because he's a grammar.
He's probably sitting there.
He's whooming.
He's shaking over there.
So when it comes to your work, does that come into effect? Do you think about the difference between, are they speaking of which? Do you try to like help them?
Am I going to stop someone and go, actually, you're mourning, not grieving? No, but I think it's important. I think this is a big part of our whole education package, if you will. Because I think when we talk about like inappropriate things to say or things to not say to grievers, I think we should also educate people on what these terms actually mean.
It's interesting because
so like a funeral professional, what does that mean versus just a funeral director?
Funeral director, like we talk about. No, that makes sense. And would you say that your grief causes your mourning? Is that weird? Does that sound interesting?
So now, like, we're going into causal and effect, yeah. And I don't necessarily believe that, because I think you could have grief without mourning or mourning without grief.
I guess if you had no connection, right? But then when you see, that's tough. I don't know if you can have one or the other.
Even without feeling, you're feeling something.
So yeah, so there would be grief and mourning.
I think you're always going to have grief. I don't necessarily know if you'll always have mourning.
So
but maybe not doing anything is actually doing something, correct? I don't know.
I don't know how deep we want to go into psychology. Well, my thought on this is when we talked about this, the thing that came to my mind is, like, the religions, right? They have certain, especially when you get into the older faiths, like, you know, with the Jewish faith, you have sitting Shiva, right? So that would be a form of mourning, correct? Wearing a black armband would be a form of mourning.
Yeah, or women used to always have to wear black or for a year.
Put it on your door, or whatever, black wreath. Or
yeah.
That would be a sign of mourning. Going to an actual funeral or going to a visitation or sitting in at a memorial service, that is mourning the loved one.
Correct.
But actually, what is going on internally, what's going on in your head while you're there is your grief.
So maybe if you want to look at it this way, what people see is your mourning. What people don't see is your grief.
What if it's both, though? Because, like, because if you're depressed,
because if you're crying anxious, at a funeral, you're doing both, right?
You're losing, you may be losing weight, or you may be not getting sleep. So the signs of grief are actually mourning because it's showing up on the outside.
But wouldn't be the mourning would be the act of not eating. Grief would be the inadequacy feeling.
But doesn't stress actually do things to the body?
Yeah, absolutely.
So wouldn't the grief be the stress, but it'd be showing up as mourning?
I think we're getting into a
it's an interesting concept. The main thing here is grief is what's internal, mourning is what's external.
Correct.
So.
Everything they come to see you for would be the mourning process.
Correct. And if you're a good professional, you help them also navigate their grief.
Correct.
So you could just be a person that a funeral director or a clinician and just help them with their mourning, but that doesn't really help the underlying part, which is the grief.
Correct.
Would you say, now here's an interesting
thing. But they might not be ready to confront
their
grief.
So mourning helps them kind of.
Well, when they're seeing you, you realize most of the time they're coming within a week, right?
Yeah, within.
That's pretty
yeah.
fresh.
Yeah, it is.
That's pretty
fresh. Unless they did a possible cremation where they're coming 2 years later to bury.
Correct.
In the family plot.
Then you're probably going to have
more grief.
More.
Or maybe mourning. I don't know. See, that's interesting.
And everybody grieves differently. So you maybe or maybe not.
As a clinician, mm-hmm. did you know to look for both of these? Do you look at both of these? So when somebody comes in with, obviously, with grief or mourning, showing mourning, is there certain things that you'll address or you see? Like, for the mourning side, do you look for certain traits? And then does that lead you to questions that'll help with their grief?
Well, this is an interesting topic because I think of a death doula, right? A death doula or a death, what's the other term they use?
Midwife.
Midwife. I think dealing with the family before, during, and after, right? They're trying to help the families bring everything together, right? The grief with the mourning. That's why they guide them to the funeral home and maybe what they think the family might need.
Well, they're
right?
guided. I mean, in tip
but
out,
then
tip
a
of the
funeral
to-
director is focusing on more of primarily, not saying you guys don't work in the grief, but
I get you.
Primarily you're working on the
mourning.
And then if they go see a grief and loss counselor after that, they're going to focus more on the grief. So maybe a death doula is the bridge between a funeral professional and a counselor?
Or you could look at it, you could look at that interesting too. You could be in that prior stage, they're in their grief. Going to the funeral home, they're in their mourning, and then going to see a psychologist, they're in their grief. So actually the funeral director would be the gap between the two griefs. because there is a lot of external things that go on in the funeral side.
I think what I'm saying to you is I think that a death doula would be working in the initial stages of both. Your focus as a funeral professional would be more focused towards the mourning.
Yes.
And then after the follow-up, if they go see a psychologist, a counselor, or clinician for grief counseling, they would be doing the after work on the grief.
Yes, correct. That makes sense.
That's what I said. Do you think, in your mind's eye, that a death doula, death midwife, may be the bridge between a funeral professional and a psychologist?
Oh, I definitely think they're the glue for a lot of it. Because
that's interesting.
Because what I find is interesting, because you could look at the hospice nurse similar to that too, because they are the prior funeral director and then the clinician, right? But a death doula stays there from prior to and in aftercare.
Well, here's the thing. Like, even when we're talking about death doulas, right, not a lot of people have experienced a death doula yet.
Right.
I'm not going to say they're brand new. They're not. But culturally, societally, they're getting bigger.
Especially in some areas, yeah.
Maybe hospice workers were the original death doulas. It's an interesting thought.
Well, it is. Well, and I think you nailed it. There's three parts of this. And I wonder, it's interesting, do we put enough care on both sides as a society? Because now we're looking at immediate burials and cremations going up. Does that take away from the mourning side? And at that point, Doc, do you find a healthier grief pattern when there's a healthier mourning pattern?
So I think this, right? This is kind of what I say to a lot of parents when they're struggling with, you know, what kind of punishment or reward situation they're going to use on their kids. I always tell them, you got to look at the best practice. My best practice is always looking at long-term versus short-term. So think about running a marathon versus a sprint. The problem I have with both grief and mourning right now is that I think we are, as a society, are focused on the short-term. We want it to be quick, done, easy, give me a pill for the depression, let's move on.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, and I would even go as far as to say that we as a society, especially in Western society or America, I find that we are trying to get rid of as much of the mourning process as so the problem is that I think
mourning and grief.
Well,
right?
No, I'm gonna even go farther. I think the problem is because there isn't. I think it's yin and yang, right? You have to balance both of those to have a healthy grief and grief and loss and mourning. So here's my thing, Doc, and here's the question. Here's the ultimate question: with us getting rid of more traditional mourning, is it causing more grief?
No. Yes and no. What I would say is just like I always hear a lot of my fellow Catholics out there that are not practicing any longer, the old belief, and again, a lot of Catholic priests out there, I apologize, you might flinch a little bit when I say this, but a lot of people will make the comment, you don't necessarily have to go to church to love God. Right. You hear that all the time. Why do we need to go to a place to show how we love our God, right? Here's my thought. I don't necessarily think you have to have a traditional mourning, like a traditional funeral, that kind of stuff, to have a grieving. What I'm going to say, though, is I think what we're trying to do is be avoidant of everything.
That's where I'm getting it. I should clarify what I'm saying. I'm not saying mourning as in you have to have a visitation, you have to have a funeral. I'm saying everything. I'm saying we went from a society where you had like 4 days. You know, you'd have 2-day visitations, you'd have the funeral that was set, and then you'd have the burial, and sometimes it would take up to 4 days.
And then you
days.
Had like women who, like widows, who would have to wear black to have the reminder of the loss.
For a year. They would have to wear black for a year.
That's what I'm saying. I think all in all, if you were to mourn, not necessarily having to do it traditionally, but mourn and focus on your mourning, meaning making it a practice for, you know, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years, maybe your whole life after that, I think you would find that you're probably going to have more success with your grieving process.
Journey, your walk with it. Yes. So yeah, because the problem with repressing or not going through the mourning process, right,
is that it's just going to come up just as strong, or not, if not stronger, the next grief you have.
It's really interesting. So would you say, as a society, in your own personal subjective mind, we are not doing a good job in mourning?
I don't think we're doing a good job in either.
Okay. Well, I guess.
I think we are a society that... Let me say it this way. We are a pain-avoidant society. So anything painful, meaning even uncomfortable emotions, we avoid. We take a pill for. So when it comes, it makes sense why we're breaking away from the traditional, where it's 4 days. We want this quick done with as fast as possible. So if we are being avoidant of both grief and mourning, we are going to have a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of negative consequences down the road because we haven't dealt with it.
No, and it makes sense. And I think it's so interesting because this conversation started with two words. But how broad are those two words?
Well, yeah, and it's beautiful because both words can mean so many different things to different people. You know, if you're sitting with, culturally, like if you're sitting with someone in a culture that believes in, you know, reincarnation or stuff like that, right? Grief is always around them. Mourning is always around them. There's people that light candles, right? I know, like cathedrals, people will go in cathedrals and light a candle for their deceased loved ones.
Special candles for special.
Seeing mourning practices are still around us, right? And it depends on the culture and religion you're brought up in. There is cultures and religions that adopt more traditional mourning styles. I'm just saying, I think if you're not going to buy into the traditional ways, I would just
find your own way to
advise you or challenge you to find a way to mourn your loved ones in your way.
So in your case, okay, so let's delve into that a little further, Doc. If the person doesn't have a faith, doesn't have maybe not even as necessarily spiritual, what would you suggest to them to help them do this practice? How would you help them practice mourning?
What do they miss most about them? A lot of people have a lot of good memories. Maybe it's, you know, I used to love, grandpa would come and pick me up and we'd go bowling every Sunday. Well, maybe every other Sunday you go bowling. Okay. Maybe you use grandpa's ball. Back to a previous episode when we were talking about what do you do
with grandma and grandpa's balls. You take them and help them with your mourning.
There you go.
Would you consider?
It's all cyclical.
So externally.
Mm-hmm.
When they come see you, it could actually be the mourning process. Because going out of their way externally
I think therapy is a mourning process.
Because you have to go. You have to actually...
You're physically choosing to do something to help with your...
Grief.
Grief.
So your chair, we'll say, deals with a little bit of both on that side.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is like mine, if you choose to be, you can choose.
Anybody working in the death professional are dealing with both.
And, you know, you brought it up, and I think this goes back to another episode. We're pinging a lot of episodes here. But I think you brought up something, Doc, which I think is extremely important, and it goes back, and this is a nod to the death doulas and hospice workers. We've already talked about hospice nurses and all them. We really need to do a better job of working in tandem.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, how do we get all of us professionals to work in a way that's most beneficial, not only for the grievers, the families we work with.
We need a death war room.
But to help us do our jobs more effectively without so much of a burden on us.
And burnout. And burnout with us.
Burnout. Burn it out.
Burn it out. We need a death war room.
We need death consultants.
That's what I'm kind of doing.
Well, I mean, professionals that are trained in all aspects of death. Hospice. Oh, man,
that'd be tough.
Death somatic, doula, psychologist, funeral professional, aftercare, legal.
Legal.
Dude, if you could have all those sects, you know, brought together into a package. The death consultant. Interesting Let's, thought.
You know, and talking about this grief versus mourning, I want to spin this out to you as a listener. If you have any thoughts on this, maybe how our society is dealing with mourning and grief, maybe thoughts on that. If you want to be part of our death war room, please get at us on our email at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com. You know, let us know what you think about this. This is so interesting because it's such two simple words that we hear all the time. Well, Doc and I hear all the time. And it's interesting how different they really are. But just like everything else, with death, they coincide and they do delve into each other. And I really don't think, Doc, and going back to the beginning, I don't think you can have one without the other. Because I don't think you can mourn without grief, and I don't think you can grieve without mourning. I challenge anybody out there to send us any way that could possibly happen, because I don't think it does. I think you have to have one without the other. Even if your grief is apathy, it's still there. So you know what I mean? It's an interesting concept. Doc is spinning his eyes right now trying to figure this out. But yeah, I mean, going back to it, I just think it's so important, Doc, that we do these. We dissect these, even these small words out there, because nobody is talking about this. And you hear it all the time that they're used, you know, misused, but they don't know they're misusing it. So it's proper education. Now, have you ever...
It's grief etiquette, right? It's death etiquette, right? We gotta educate. We gotta get better at writing or reciting the right vocabulary, because I think it is important. And I think it is something that, like I said, if you were sitting with a lit major, English major, they're going to look at you and go, "You're crazy. How do you not know the difference between affect or effect?"
It's like, well, how do you not know the difference between mourning and grief? You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Thank you, Doc, for yet again, bringing this to our attention. I think it's a wonderful, you know, and I challenge all of you out there to, and even if you've missed said these in.
Oh yeah, I don't. This is to learn. You know, we don't want to be walking around going, excuse me.
You know what? You want to?
You're actually mourning right now.
Next time you're out with a date, bring this one up. This will get the topic going. Hey, do you know what I learned the other day? The difference between grief and mourning.
It'll just really throw you for a loop.
There you go. It's
loopity loop.
You get some nice spaghetti. You know, with meatballs, and talk about grief and mourning. So yeah, yet again, if you have any thoughts on this, please get at us at our email. But right now, Doc, I think it's time for a little Q&A. Everyone loves that Q&A. Spaghetti Q, spaghetti A. Give me some of that.
Grandpa's bowling balls.
I don't know where that was going at first. I'm glad you flippy floppy that one. All right, so here is our question, Doc. You ready?
I am ready.
All right, the title is Waiting for Death.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Waiting for Godot.
No. It seems that I'm now...
You remember that play?
Can I get back to this, please? It's embarrassing. It seems that I'm now stuck in a position of always waiting for someone to die. A mother with dementia 3 years ago, a useless sister, in quotations, that sucks the life out of everyone, with cancer a year ago, and now an 85-year-old father that gave up on life when mom died. He's reduced his life to reruns in Walmart. He and everyone else left me to take care of mom alone as she descended into madness. She almost took me with her. I hated him for it and told myself I was out of here when mom was gone. But here I am, waiting for him to pass so I don't feel guilty for leaving, spending time and money I can't afford to keep his life going. Is anyone else going through something like this? Doc, Doc wants to think about that. My first thing about this, first of all, to the person that asked this question, yet again, thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for bringing this up. That's a lot to deal with. And it's interesting that we have this innate feeling that we have to take care of people, you know, especially when it comes to family. And that's very tough, especially if you're the only one that decided to do that. It's tough because there's part of me that when I hear these stories in the funeral home, I tend to find out that even though it was very stressful and very angry and all that, they were very happy and proud of the decision they made. Because I think there comes a point where we as humans lose track of what's really going on right now. And I think after the fact, we realize how important those small things that we did were. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that they care or whatnot. I'm saying that to this individual, for taking on to take care of mom, to take care of the sister, to take care of dad, especially on a dad that's given up, which is extremely challenging and difficult, and I can't even imagine what that looks like. I tip my hat to you as a death professional. Helping anybody transition is worth it, but I'm sure you're dealing with a lot of your own feelings and thoughts, and I don't want to discredit your thoughts or your feeling. But I do think it's important that you're reaching out, because as sad as this sounds, I'm sure you're not alone out there.
Yeah, it kind of just sounds like you're in purgatory, right? The Catholic belief of before you make it to the final stage. You know, it's interesting. I was sitting with how isolating you must feel being the only person that is focusing on, you know, your parents. That puts a lot of pressure on you. And I would just advise anybody in a caregiver role to make sure that you're doing self-care. Sometimes that means stepping away. That sometimes that means, you know, going and getting a massage or doing something for yourself. You can only take care of people when you're taking care of yourself. Yeah, just, you know, just when he was reading this, you know, and of course, you know, I'm trying not to, you know, take it out of context, but like, it just sounds like there's a lot of anger there. And I just wonder, you know, is you being the only sole provider good for you? Or are you going to hold on to some resentments after this? Resentments towards your dad, towards your sister, maybe even towards your mom? Because I can understand that this has got to be a very painful process for you, and not a lot of people are going to understand, nor, I hate saying this, nor care. So I guess my heart goes out to you. Thank you for writing in. Appreciate the thought, and I think a lot of people in the caregiver roles can feel very alone and very angry at times. And, you know, what a blessing your parents have to have you in their lives. So hang in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And anybody else who has any thoughts on this or just wants to tell their story, like, you know, this is a safe platform. Doc and I are here to listen and to answer anything you have. Please email us at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com. Send in your thoughts, your likes, your, you know, get out there and send us out to other people. Because these are important conversations that need to happen. They need to happen more in regular talks. So please get us out there, listen to us, subscribe, all of that. And if you're not talking about death,
then you're not living. Thank you so much.